So now that we've got that issue sorted out here, let's just go forward. So my name is Reid Purvis. I'm going to introduce myself in a second, but first of all, I wanted to entertain you with a video that was came overnight and I thought was pretty funny. So let's actually watch that.
He works for an organization that's stuck in the past.
Now, does VM Limited have its own public cloud?
Well, do you have your own public cloud?
Because while he says he's selling a cloud, he's actually selling nothing more than virtualization.
You know, when you're moving a solution based on virtualization, you gotta have the right vehicle. But this is my mobile conference room, and it has everything.
So with your solution, will I be able to manage other hypervisors?
No.
He's locked in an 8-track world, and he's got a 1-track mind.
I'm a vert guy. That's all I know. That's all I want to know.
The price you're giving me, is that based on unlimited use?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the more you use, the more you pay.
That's not unlimited use.
Do I think VM Limited is stuck in the past? Does this look like the past?
There are others, but none quite like him.
So talk to me about your new pricing structure.
Some people get so obsessed with having the latest, newest, most advanced technology all the time. That's a rat race, man.
He's the man who wants to sell you an outdated IT plan from the back of a van.
If I go with VM Limited, will I be able to see deep inside my apps?
What would you want to see?
Performance, bottlenecks. I'd want to identify root causes and fix them and see whatever else might be going on in there.
He's Tad, salesman, VM Limited.
Clouds aren't bad, but they're a fad. I can't even have that as a bumper sticker.
Don't get stuck in the IT past. Get private cloud solutions from Microsoft.
Fantastic. I saw that the other night, yesterday when it came out overnight. Today and tomorrow, there's actually VMworld happening in the United States, and Microsoft has no shortage of the ability to give our competitors and other people a little bit of a dig. Obviously, general virtualization here, but let me go through a bit of our agenda. We're going to just talk about some bit of disclosure on my part, and I'm going to tell you a few things. Then we're going to go through a brief marketing overview, talk a bit about Microsoft and where we believe virtualization fits in the world, some stuff about cloud capabilities. There's lots and lots of sessions here today about the technical details of Hyper-V. Who was at the last session here? A lot of you. So Phil Duff went through some very good demonstrations and an overview of Hyper-V and Server 2008 R2 SP1, also went through VMM 2008 R2, as well as a little bit about VMM 2012. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of those things, but at a higher level, and then we're going to go on, talk a bit about what's coming in the future as much as I can. So let me introduce myself in terms of full disclosure. So my name's Reid Purvis, and I actually used to work for VMware. Who's worked for VMware in the past year? Who's running vSphere in their environment today? Come on, I expect almost everybody. Yeah, sort of. All right, let me say this. 3 years ago, 2 years ago, fantastic stuff. VMware was the only choice, and I'll come to that in a bit. But my background has, and I've made a 20-year career out of working against Microsoft. You know, looking around, my background, worked in the Novell stage and actually ended up losing the battle there with directory services. We know where that's gone. I've done a lot of stuff on Linux. Done a lot of stuff in other areas. And now, I looked around about a year ago and said, hey, guess what? The cloud battles, what's happening, where cloud is going. And I believe, honestly, that Microsoft has the breadth, the depth of technology and capability is going to be a winner. Now, I know there's a lot of technical details, and I'm happy either to get in with them offline a little bit here, or if it's got a little bit of time in the end, we can go in and answer a few technical questions. Yeah? VMware's not a bad product, and I'm not here to bag VMware, but I am going to give them a little bit of a kick once in a while here, because I think that there is a confirmation bias to a lot of people. A lot of people have made choices in the past, and they confirm and reconfirm their choices instead of actually seeing the truth about Microsoft. Let me talk about that. So as we get in here, I'm going to be a little bit interactive, but let's talk about where the market is. You know, these are all of the IT challenges that people have today. We're getting squeezed. Obviously, server sprawl has happened, and you know, we're part and parcel to that. IT is growing. Lots of aspects around security, around costs, around manageability. And with that, you know, we have some challenges. Here's the about the explosion of virtual machines. If you look at the bottom graph here, you'll actually see that the actual number of physical servers has sort of grown linearly in line. You know, we expect that to happen, and that's a function of both the demand for IT going up, but also the fact that servers today are getting more powerful. How many people are running servers that are not quad-core today? So look at that. There's very few people here which haven't come into the new generation. That means, if most of you are running dual socket servers, that you've got 8 cores in each of your boxes. How many people are running servers less than 16 gig of memory? Just a handful again. Some of you, I bet you some, most of those are physical, or a lot of them are just entry-level, you know, branch office servers. Well, guess what? We're packing more servers today. Virtualization is increasing the density. We're doing a lot of things about moving the componentizing of those applications so that you can manage things better. And that's why the virtual machine sprawl is happening. Now, these are the same challenges and same challenges that Phil Duff talked about, sort of looking at how we've grown over the marketplace. So let's talk a bit about why Microsoft is more than just virtualization. So from a Microsoft perspective, we're all about the application. We're all about making sure that those apps to your end users and to your businesses are up and running. How many people have CIOs that say, I don't care if the customer gets service at the end of the pipe? Anyone ever have a CIO that says, fantastic, the server is up, but the people are still complaining? Yeah, no one's got that. We're all looking at that and saying, CIO gets a call, I can't get my business stuff done. I can't do my analytics. I can't do my CRM transactions. I can't do my sales reports or what have you. Production is down. And production can be down for many, many reasons. Virtualization is a key technique for clouds, for manageability, for a lot of security aspects, but it's one technique. What Microsoft cares about and what you care about, at least evidenced by your lack of hands just a moment ago, is about the application, about the service to the end user. Yeah? So where do we fit into this? Microsoft believes that we should have virtualization and key capabilities across the entire stack. So what do? We perform capability from the bare metal up. We talk about and we work closely with hardware partners. Yeah? Obviously, the major hardware sponsor here today is HP, but Microsoft has an entire ecosystem of vendors and OEMs that provide hardware. It's an open platform. We work with them in a fair and open and transparent way. We work with these systems from the bare metal, from, you know, building the OS both physical and virtualized. Yeah? We also work with them, if you notice this thing called Fast Track. How many people have heard of Fast Track in here? Yeah, there's a few of you. That's where we work with the OEM partners and our technical partners, Fujitsu and HP and Dell and all the other nice guys, that basically say, here's how you can automatically deploy a Hyper-V environment today with the technologies out today. And a lot of that was discussed in last session as well as in future sessions here as we go through this week. Let me mention about something interesting, because this is really where we have a differentiation point with some of our key competitors. We believe in openness. That seems hard to swallow, doesn't it? How many people don't believe that Microsoft's an open company? Okay, this is a spectrum, isn't it? Nobody. Come on. I thought everybody, you read the blogs, and Microsoft continuously gets hammered for not being open. Surprisingly enough, we use a lot of open standards for our virtualization capability. VHD format, absolutely open, released. The VMDK format, completely VMware focused. They control it. They don't release it to the open public. You can get and use their APIs. They control it. Our management stack, we let customers and partners develop applications which manage our hypervisor. You can manage it with PowerShell if you like. You can build your own management appliances, your own management capability. Citrix and Quest have both done that. In fact, VMware have a open sort of quasi non-production capability to manage some of ours as well. How many people have tried that? They downloaded it? Who knows about that? Holy smokes, I tell you what, it is not great. Yeah? If you haven't seen it, you know, you want to plug into that vCenter stuff and try to get them to use Hyper-V, you'll find out that they know less about our stuff than lots of other things. So let me say this, it's multi-hypervisor enabled, and we believe in that openness. So let's talk a little bit about the operating systems. Again, we're open. We work with Citrix, with SUSE, with CentOS, with Red Hat to support all of those great operating systems, as well as making sure that our capability and our platform is the best for our operating system as well. So lots of capability there. One of the common things we get slammed a little bit on, yeah, why don't we support DOS? Why don't we? How many people are running DOS in a virtual machine here? All you ESX hosts? Fantastic. How's that going for you? Mission critical application. No, it's fantastic. But absolutely, there's legacy apps out there. Yeah? Legacy apps that sometimes require that. And based on those things, sure, choose your hypervisor, choose your environment appropriately. Right now, Microsoft have decided that there are certain things that we should probably focus on, like the future and making sure that we support our current stuff better. We also let third-party management apps come into here. So HP, CA, BMC, EMC, again, open and available for our partners to also work with our platform and our ecosystem. And then finally, we make our platform the best place to run applications that we can work on. .NET, obviously Java and PHP are open capabilities, are open environments, and we are working really hard in those standards bodies to bring those out and to make sure that Hyper-V works with those in the best possible way. So let me give you a bit of an experience here. So I believe today I'm going to make Australian history, or I'm making Australian history today. I'm the only person, I think, who's actually presented as a key speaker at both a VMware vForum event as well as a TechEd. So I'd like to congratulate you on this fine, auspicious day. Thank you. And let me tell you how I explain my choice. Basically, Microsoft's solution is to look at the entire stack. Now, I spent three and a half years at VMware telling people that they didn't have to worry about SQL replication because we replicated stuff and we could copy things at the virtual machine level from one server to the next and provide that high availability. We can provide that live migration or vMotion. We also can provide a lot of other stuff using storage techniques. Any DBAs in the room? Come on. Oh, fantastic. What do you think if your SQL server just all of a sudden reboots? What do you think that does to your data? Yeah, essentially corrupts it. So without worrying this, about being application aware, about understanding what you're trying to do higher up the stack, guess what? You're basically at the mercy of corruption, of rolling back, of trying to repair. So once you have this failover, anybody using Site Recovery Manager here from VMware? Fantastic. I'm going to pick on you, sir, if I can, just if you shout out. Have you, when you fail over from site to site, what does your applications do?
They reboot.
They reboot. Absolutely. It's a hard reset. And that's good. It helps you provide that. There's a lot of capability there to script those virtual machines to come up on the other side. But guess what? It is a hard reboot, and that's an issue. Yeah? A lot of customers all of a sudden forget the fact that they have these applications they've got to worry about. And they've got to worry about DNS changes, they've got to worry about all this authentication, about lots of other issues, which don't come along quite often when you start to have these disaster recovery or site recovery manager type of issues. So let's talk about cloud capabilities, because it's all about the cloud, right? Microsoft has this slogan, we're all in. So we have really three levels of clouds: infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. Who didn't know that these were the three types of clouds? That's the question? Okay. Let's get on. Everyone here is pretty much skilled up on this. We have public clouds. Microsoft has a solid capability here. I'm not going to talk in detail about these. All I'm going to say is that they're good. Yeah? Windows Azure offers a lot of capabilities, and if you saw Amit Pawar talk today, and you'll see some of the other sessions around here, you'll find that there is a lot of synergies with these. Office 365, Windows Intune, these are all services that I highly encourage you to check out. Then there's the people like me who come into the private cloud space, and I'm really about that kind of infrastructure up because of my background, but Windows Server and Hyper-V Server and System Center offer you the management capability within your data center, within your security environment, within your four walls. And then, of course, we provide the best platform to put these things on. If you're running these things, you'll see the next talk in here is about SQL Server performance capability. Absolutely, Microsoft have worked in the last year or more basically to make these applications run best on our environment, on Windows, but also on Windows Hyper-V. And we can go into that in a little bit. What does this mean? We have a common platform to bring all this stuff together. What happens in your environment if you're running a virtualized server and you want to migrate it from your environment to a hoster's environment? You might have a hoster, or you might have an outsourcing partner, and you want to migrate your virtual machine, or you might want to spin up another virtual machine in that host environment. You need to do a lot of things. You need to have connectivity. So you find that your plumbing's in place, you go out, you buy your telco links. Then all of a sudden you need to make sure that you have your authentication, so you got to federate. What are you federating with? Anybody not using Active Directory here? Okay, fantastic. So you're going to use Active Directory Federation. Then all of a sudden you need to make sure that your IP addressing scheme's correct and unique. So IPv6, fantastic, right? This is the kind of capability. Then you want to look at, if you're doing some of this stuff, potentially direct access. These are all the plumbing and the capability which glue clouds together, which means when you do transport from one site to another, you don't have to worry about changing your IP address, changing your DNS, changing all the things that make this stuff really hard in IPv4 today. And then, of course, we have all the applications which can use that stuff. Visual Studio, the .NET stuff, and they're all managed by those System Center. So where does this leave us? Why Microsoft Private Cloud? Really, it's all about the application. It's all about making sure that you have that capability to run that app in a clean and seamless environment. Cross-platform, we support multiple hypervisors, as I mentioned, lots of guest OS stuff. What we like to call it is cloud on your terms and best-in-class performance. Sure, there's lots of areas and nooks and crannies where you're going to find, and I'm sure I'm going to get probably at least a few of you, come down after this presentation and say, I have this app, and it runs better on ESX. How many people have that? Come on. No one's to admit it. Guess what? There are some technologies, I'm happy to admit, that we don't do, like binary translation. You have those old apps, some of them are going to run better on ESX. But we say, keep your old ESX. Yeah, you have some legacy. Going forward, you're going to want to look at Hyper-V. So this is the whole thing about transitioning to the cloud. We want to make sure that it's self-service, elastic, scalable. So where does Microsoft fit into the relative to the VMware stack? This is a customized slide that I built. And on the left here, you're actually seeing the VMware side of things. You've got the ESX and ESX hypervisor. And let me be blunt. ESX and ESXi are good hypervisors. Yeah? No doubt about it. They have good performance. You've got virtualized stuff today. You know, I wouldn't be rushing out and arbitrarily taking that stuff and just chucking it out. You've paid for your licenses, and VMware have charged you a lot of money for it. I know how much they've charged you. I used to work there. I used to sell to you. Anybody actually seen me outside this room and actually bought licenses from me? I'm sure there'll be one or two. It's hard to see at the top. vCenter is very proprietary. It works just with ESX. And guess what? vCloud Director, fairly new product from VMware, really trying to make sure that they have this public and private cloud connection. The problem is this, is that they don't have any of these other things. We offer with SCVMM 2012 and some of the new System Center 2012 suites a whole fabric management capability. We offer capability to manage Hyper-V, Zen Server, and Hyper-V all in the same environment, in the same cloud, and have the virtual machines deployed to anyone and use and understand those environments. I'm very, very proud to say that SCVMM 2012 has dramatically improved knowledge and understanding of ESX. Anyone use SCVMM 2008 and tried to put their ESX host in there? One or two there in the back? You'll find that if you did that, 2008 R2 sort of looked at ESX like a Hyper-V host. Yeah, that was a great thing. Let me be a little bit less sarcastic. VMM 2012 actually understands resource pools. It understands distributed virtual switches. It understands the way when you do a vMotion or a live migration that we can understand where that's gone to, and we don't necessarily force VM to say, put it back. Yeah? We also can take applications with that and then have them migrate, not necessarily on a live migration capacity, but split that load out by managing the external load balancers, the external fabric, and saying, guess what, we'll spin up another copy of your web server, but this time we'll do it on a Hyper-V host or a Zen server host, and we can balance that out. In the future, you're going to start to see us be able to balance out with App Controller, our cloud portal capability, to come over into Azure, and then utilize the rest of the System Center technologies to manage both the physical and the virtualized environments all under one environment. So here's a quick slide deck, a slide of App Controller. You can see at the top corner there, there's a lot about clouds, and you can have multiple clouds. This is where you can go in and start to assign those clouds to users and have administrative roles, and it understands and fundamentally works in a seamless environment. Lots more about this in other sessions, so I'll move on a bit. Let me address for a moment the common complaint we get. Well, ESX has lots of great performance. Hyper-V surely can't be as good. Let's not talk back, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, because I definitely think that Hyper-V has gone through a number of iterations. We've patched it. 2008 came out. 2008 R2's come out. SP1 has dramatically improved with dynamic memory and remote FX kind of capabilities, and we've made a lot of adjustments in there. So if we can suspend this, your belief and your confirmation bias of 2 years ago, I can tell you that today the performance of Hyper-V for a single virtual machine, and when you're not over-committing your resources on a server, is equally as well, or if not better, than on ESX. So here's a few things that you should be aware of. Yeah, we do have live migration. Does anyone not know that? Okay, so, you know, let's just, on the fundamentals of virtualization for both VMware, Zen Server, Hyper-V, KVM, pick your hypervisor, all pretty much using the same type of technology. They're using hardware virtualization. Granted, if you're running a legacy app, the gentleman in the back there, about DOS, or you're running something with Windows 95, these operating systems were never meant or built in the era of virtualization. Never even thought about that. It was at a time when Intel didn't even think that this stuff could be virtualized. Yeah? Guess what? Those operating systems run and use technology to be virtualized called binary translation. Binary translation is a good technology, but it's slow. Yeah? Doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad. If you want to run an egg legacy app, binary translation, use your old ESX3 server, 3.5. Fantastic. Yeah? They've got some free stuff there. Use it. But we want to look forward. We oftentimes look at the new processor support. We want to have second level address translation. We've added in dynamic memory. We have all these capabilities. I'm going to talk about them in a bit more. What do these provide? Provide the best performance for our capability, our applications possible. So these numbers, I've not done the test, but these numbers I've been told are for single server performance. I think that's pretty impressive. But I think you'll see if you do a head-to-head comparison that we are competitive in this. So this is an interesting slide, and I think this is one of the few marketing slides I've thrown in here, primarily that shows that there's statistics, lies, damn lies, and statistics. Basically, what this is saying is that Microsoft and Hyper-V are gaining momentum, and that's what you should take away from this. We have, for new sales, outsold and outdeployed VMware. Now, having said that, that doesn't necessarily mean at the very top end of the marketplace, you know, in large data centers, that we're out there smashing it all down. Let's not be unrealistic about it. What I see, though, is that there are large companies, and not none that I can name here today, which are talking to us and saying, we want to look at Hyper-V, because guess what? We don't want to be under the thumb of our one provider. More about that. But these are some of them that are using this. University of Canberra and Coles are two examples of environments that we're in Australia today that we can disclose. So no slide deck is complete without the obligatory Gartner slide. How many people saw this last year, this type of slide last year? One of you might have remembered it. Probably there's someone from the media, maybe. Well, guess what? Gartner has now graced us with being into the leaders quadrant. Those other people, they've been relegated into, or close to being relegated into, the dustbin of history for virtualization. No, sorry, that's a bad comment. Oracle has come out with some announcements, and fantastic for them. I think you're going to see a lot of competition, but basically what this is saying is that all three of those hypervisors, at least in the top quadrant, are looking and have the capability for production, data center, heavy workloads today. Yeah, there is a gap. There's a large gap between us and VMware. And we know that VMware have announced recently vSphere 5. It looks like an interesting and a good product. It's going to be a good hypervisor. But it's not going to answer some of the questions I talk about the applications, about cloud capability and some of those things. I'm going to answer some of this and we're going to close the gap towards the end of the presentation. So let's just briefly run through how we've done some testing. VMware's, and this is one thing that I think is a very interesting discussion or an interesting point. Microsoft lets other people test our products and publish reliable data or the data that they feel is best and open that up so that it can be commented on, debated, discussed. VMware does not allow us or any other vendor to publish performance data about its hypervisor unless they approve it and review it and say, yes, we agree 100% with the way you've done these tests. And I think that's a bit of an interesting thing. So what have we done? We've done tests of our own hypervisor on a single host storage. And what have we got? We have done And we basically looked at the load in this case for online transaction processing, and we've seen that we can quadruple the load and not have and have less than a doubling of the latency for those types of transactions. So this is, again, a bit of evidence that we have and are prepared for larger workloads. Here's an example for performance and scalability in our disk I/O subsystem. We're looking at this, and we look at the actual native performance on the left. And when we look at that, we see that as long as your disks are appropriately configured, you can get near native performance out of them based on the number of IOPS you push through this. So this is, in fact, pure disk performance or total megabits per second or through the system. And absolutely on the right, if you look at this graph, you're going to see that on the very beginning as it ramps up, if you start to have a block size of half a K or 1K or 2K, that you're going to end up with some performance hits. How many people have a block size on their NTFS of 1K? How about of 8K? No. The recommended performance criteria for this stuff is oftentimes 16, 32, or 64K block sizes. And when you're starting to look at that, you're starting to see that at these levels, you're getting very close to native performance and that the overhead is very small. It's entirely possible to take an I/O disk subsystem and smash it to death by giving it lots of little small IOPS and sending the platters and the disks and all the stuff, all the write-through cache and all that jazz basically sideways. Yeah? That doesn't prove anything. This shows you that if you properly configured, we can perform very well. Here's another graph, just to show you that we do provide near linear scaling. Now, again, we recommend that you don't overcommit your environment. Anybody's ever overcommitted a vSphere environment, you'll find that, yeah, what happens? Yeah. So let me just paraphrase that. Bad. Well, you know why? Because you've gotten into the same thing. You're going to go back to this slow stuff, which we call brown, round, spinny stuff. Yeah? And it's got that spinning rust. And what happens? You're going to scrape off a few bits, or you have to write a few bits there, and that's about 10,000 times slower than memory. By the way, has anyone heard of a company called Fusion.io? Here's a bit of a plug. Fusion.io? Yeah. If you're ever looking at high-speed disk and you want to get out of the IOPS issue, look at that stuff. It rocks. You can make your stuff really fly. So I think there's a lot of technologies to help you basically have a gentle slope off the curve of if you want to get over that. But that's a different kind of thing. It doesn't work on all hypervisors, and it works with us just as well. So if you want to overtax and overcommit your boxes and you want to have that 2% or 1% time when you don't want to pay for that hardware, just do it in a gentle way and be aware that all hypervisors will suffer with the same capability when it comes back to the hardware. Yeah? Performance of the hardware is the same. When you're not overcommitting your resources, you get the same performance fundamentally out of our hypervisor as all the others. We do believe, and I have evidence, that from a pure SQL, a pure Windows 7 capability, that we can actually outperform them based on our understanding of our own operating systems. So let's dispel the myth of guest operating systems. How many people are running a guest operating system that's not on this chart? A few? Yeah? Which one are you running? Which version? Like Ubuntu or?
Oracle Linux.
Or OEL?
And
you're running that on vSphere? Yeah. Did you get call up Oracle for support?
Actually,
we've been in
support completely useless.
Well, let's not debate Oracle support for a second, because that's a different topic. But as far as I'm aware, and I'll stand corrected, is that Oracle won't officially support their OEL, Oracle Enterprise Linux, on anything but their hypervisor. Does anyone have a different contrary evidence? Sorry?
It's supported but not certified.
They won't certify performance. Is that enterprise ready? We stand by our stuff, right? Hold on a second here. Is it? I call that certifiable. All jokes aside, let me just say that we, as Microsoft, offer support from Red Hat, and you can buy a Red Hat support contract with Microsoft and have their stuff and a single Microsoft telephone support person or guy actually support Red Hat on top of our hypervisor. Yeah? We have an open virtualization support framework and certification framework called the SVVP. As far as I'm aware, it's the only one that's open in the industry and provides for other vendors and for us to certify our capability on their hardware or their virtualization capability, as well as applications that run on our hypervisor as well as theirs. So SQL and Exchange and SharePoint all can be certified for multiple hypervisors if these other vendors want to come in and work with us. We manage the program because guess what? Most customers are asking for our support statements. And when we say it's supported, it means that we don't pass the buck. Yeah? Other vendors basically say, well, yeah, we've tested it, it runs, but if you have a problem, call the other guy. And that's where you get into this buck passing problem. And I've personally been involved in that, and I'm sure some of you have as well. So what does this all mean? I fundamentally and truly believe that there is a confirmation bias in the marketplace, that because a lot of you may be running VMware, that you might not have had a chance to revisit Hyper-V. You might not have had a chance to revisit SCVMM. And I will say this, that the landscape is changing. I believe that we are the best platform to run many of your workloads on, and that going forward, we are offering an extremely competitive and compelling environment here. So last little bit here, and then I'll get into some of where we're heading in the future. VDI. How many people are looking at VDI today? Yep. Great, great stuff. It's not a cost-saving mechanism. It's a mechanism for improving your flexibility, for making sure that you have that DR component, for having the ability to really work in your flexibility of your environments. We provide some great capability around VDI performance, and because of our understanding of your VDI workloads, Windows 7 primarily, we have some very good data that shows that we can have higher densities than many of our, and far as I understand, all of our competitors in the marketplace. As an example, if you run VDI on ESX, they have this great technology called transparent page table sharing. One of their key recommendations for transparent page table sharing when you're losing a VDI is to turn off ASLR, the address space layout randomization in Windows 7. That's a security feature which allows applications to load in different locations in the memory each time you run an application. It dramatically improves the capability for or reduces the attack surface and the attack requirements for viruses and for other types of security threats. Why would you want to turn that off? Yeah? You've concentrated all your virtual machines into one location, and then you've got a place where all the viruses can roam around. Isn't that fantastic? So we recommend, and we have an environment where our dynamic memory capability allows these things to be optimized, and we can take advantage of it in ways with our integration services, which our competitors don't take advantage of. So let's address free Hyper-V. In our last session, our learned colleague down here actually discussed about free Hyper-V. Absolutely available. If you haven't downloaded it, go ahead, download it, run it up. One of the key aspects we find, though, is that people look at it and say, oh, geez, I have that command line. What do I do? Well, let me say this. Besides offering free, out-of-the-box, live migration and high availability, there's a CodePlex utility called CoreConfig, which allows you to still use the same familiar GUIs on Hyper-V server to configure it. Now, we know that there are some people out there. How many people have tried this Hyper-V server? A few of you? Anyone done NIC teaming? Yeah? A few chuckles maybe in the room there. Somebody's laughing a bit. You absolutely understand that NIC teaming probably isn't as elegant. We understand that there are some improvements to be made, and I'm hoping, beyond all hope, that it's actually going to get a lot of traction in future versions. So that feedback has been put up. You tried to NIC team this stuff, and you can do it, but we leave a lot of that NIC teaming capability down to our hardware driver people, Broadcom, Emulex, and the Intel cards and stuff like that. Guess what? Those are something that we're going to start to look at and be a little bit more prescriptive about how that stuff gets enumerated on the PCI bus so that it becomes a little bit more predictable versus having that delegated down to the driver. Here's a quick apples-to-apples comparison. Yep, it's live migration and high availability included. Anyone try to do live migration and high availability with the free version of ESXi? Not there, is it? Nope. We don't have the large VMs in our environment today. You know, anyone running 8-way symmetric multiprocessing VMs on ESX? Fantastic. What is that? SQL. Any reason why you didn't keep it on physical? Didn't want to go and deploy another physical box with that capability. What about boot from VHD? Just a thought. If it's an 8-way symmetric multiprocessing VM or an 8-way symmetric, for a big SQL box, there's probably some alternatives that customers can think about that might be also give you the advantages of easy deployment without necessarily having to pay the VMware tax as well as some of the limitations they have. Absolutely, you can do that. And I'm not challenging your choice. I'm just saying that there are alternatives that oftentimes are forgotten. Manageability issue. Sure. Yeah, manageability. Hopefully, I've answered a few of those. Let's quickly and briefly look at System Center. If you don't know what System Center is, I think you should probably leave now. No. Yes, you're going to hear about System Center all week long because it's a fundamental component of our private cloud story. I won't belabor these, but I do think it's worthwhile for you to understand what they do, and I'll leave that for you in a bit. And of course, System Center wraps around all of these things from a management perspective. And we, of course, underpin that by our hypervisor. So let's talk about System Center Virtual Machine Manager 2012. If you haven't downloaded the beta today, you should. There's a lot of good stuff coming out with this. It's available in beta today. Release candidate probably will come out shortly in the next little while. And this allows you to do a lot of sophisticated stuff. One of them, and I noticed that the people wasn't this size of room, system application or server application virtualization, server app V. The server app V stuff is going to make your life a lot easier for deployment, for manageability across hypervisors, across clouds. So server app V is the ability to allow your applications to be virtualized so that you can then, instead of necessarily moving the virtual machine and trying to do a bunch of memory copies and trying to do a bunch of stuff that is a lot harder to do and takes a lot more grunt, to actually take your application, spin up a new copy of it, start to configure the load balancer, make it resilient, and then gracefully, gently move your information across or have it be used across from one side to another. This is where Microsoft is applying its application knowledge and the ability to say it's more than just virtualization at the hardware layer. Yeah? So you can do server app V. It's part of SCVMM, but You can do this across your virtualized environment, across your physical environment, across ESX, across Zen Server, across Hyper-V. If it runs on Windows Server 2008 and meets into the Server App V requirements, you can use it. So I mentioned about App Controller. This is our cloud capability, and it's the capability that spans the clouds between various environments, hosted environments, your on-premise environments, also your Azure environments. So if you want to burst out to the cloud, you can take your application, package it up with Server App V, and then say to your hosting provider or your outsource provider, I'd like a little bit of capacity on demand. Guess what? With Server App V and SCVMM, they can use SCVMM in their environment, still have an ESX hypervisor if you want, and have their environment spin up an application for you. If it's a web-facing environment from the front end, then guess what? They've got internet access, away you go. If it's not, and you will still want to have your back-end connection, you still need the connection capability, but you can federate that with ADFS and all the other things I mentioned before, get that to work. So let's come to the closing bits here and just briefly highlight or mention about the way we think about this again. And it's again, it's not, I've made a few jokes here today, and that's all fine and dandy. They'd certainly love to give us a few jokes in their presentations. I've delivered some of those. But let me say this, that we fundamentally look at the application, and that's what's important. System Center can detect when those applications are under stress because System Center Operations Manager has the management packs. Yeah, has Exchange management packs, SQL management packs, SharePoint management packs. You know, we have management packs from HP that understand the physical environment as well as the virtual environment, the entire operating system. Once those things are detected, then what happens is that System Center as a whole, orchestrator, virtual machine manager, app controller, SCOM, they'll start to rearrange that stuff and within the constraints and the policies you've set up, add or create new capacities you require. Bare metal provision a new Hyper-V box included with SCVMM 2012. And then, of course, what does that provide us? It's that private cloud capability, which is elastic. I've got the bare metal. I'll spin it up. I'll put a Hyper-V server on it. I need to have it as a physical server. Why? Maybe for constraints. Maybe you want to do real-time analysis of your stock exchange trading. But guess what? You want to have that predictability? There are some applications, real-time applications, which are sensitive for that. So just wrapping up here, I wanted to mention about a few things you might not be aware of. Licensing. Oh, there's a word, isn't it? How many people like licensing? It's like going to the dentist. Yeah? Let me say to you that it's one of the most misunderstood and misrepresented areas of Microsoft. You can, and Microsoft has, an incredibly virtualization-friendly and cloud-friendly virtualization policy in terms of a licensing policy. We support at the application layer, which is not shown on here, things like application license mobility. Sure, you have to buy support, software assurance. You buy software assurance, you get license mobility. But that means that you don't have to rebuy your licenses if you're going to move to a hosting provider or if you're going to move to a cloud provider or what have you. There is a licensing construct called ECI, Enrollment for Core Infrastructure, and it basically, if you buy that per socket for your servers, will give you all of the necessary components you need to do what I've talked about today. You should look at that. Look at it. If you're not using that licensing construct, and you probably not because, to tell you the truth, most people seem to have not been aware of it, you should call up your vendor and say, I'd like to understand more about it. It's an easy way of doing it, and you'll save money. I have personally been involved with customers that have bought licenses, mixed match, wiggly-piggly all over the place. It happens to the best of us, and all of a sudden, they look at this, and they save money, and they get more capability. There's a great orchestrator talk happening here, 5 o'clock? One of my colleagues is doing. I encourage you highly to, you know, to come along to that session, because guess what? Orchestrator, that's a product that VMware tried to buy, Opalis, and as a plug for this, it automates and can manage and orchestrate ESX and VMware equally as well as Hyper-V and the rest of their stuff. So just a bit of a nudge to our friends and to highlight what I showed you in that video. Unlimited licensing, yeah? You want unlimited rights? That's what we can offer you. We're not on that core count craze that some of our other competitors are. Fundamentally, if you haven't looked at the vSphere 5 licensing, it's a big shift in the marketplace. They've taken a big gamble. How many people are happy with that gamble? How many people are happy with the vSphere licensing?
As long as you don't overdescribe, you're okay.
Yeah. So they've had like three kicks at it, right? Version number one, not so good. Version number two, a little better, not quite as good. Version number three, finally we've got something that people are palatable. When they talk about fairness in their environment, about making this more equitable, they mean you guys paying more to them. I mean, that's fundamentally what this is. It is a cost increase. And if they can demand it, fantastic. The best way to negotiate with VMware, these are US prices, is to put a Hyper-V in your environment, and when the next time the VMware sales guy shows up, or the next time a partner shows up and says, I want to get some more VMware, or I want to sell you some more VMware stuff, you say, well, I'd like to actually have a try of Hyper-V. And then you'll see how they actually discount their prices. I can tell you this from personal experience. So in conclusion, I just wanted to leave you with one other piece of supporting evidence why I'm extremely optimistic about Microsoft and their cloud story and around the hypervisor and our competitiveness in this area. We are working hard at what is codenamed Windows Server 8. Now, I can't talk a lot about it. A lot of secret squirrel stuff. There's a lot of rumors on the internet. There's a lot of back and forth about things. But I can tell you that we've heard and taken a lot of feedback and worked really hard on the capability for private cloud. And these are central themes that you're going to start to see emerge. Web and app capabilities. Management and efficiency, making these things easier to use. And on the desktop side, we're doing stuff there as well on the commercialization of IT. So what I'd like you to do is to run a small video.
Here we are running Windows Server Codename 8, and this is running Hyper-V. We heard from you and your customers that we needed to provide support for more virtual processors within the virtual machine to provide service offerings for larger scale-up workloads like SQL. I'm going to connect to the SQL virtual machine and bring up Task Manager to show you this virtual machine is running 16 virtual processors within the virtual machine. Now, in case you're wondering, 16 isn't the limit. This just happens to be the largest server I was able to bring today. And I'm going to bring up Resource Monitor to show you this SQL virtual machine, this large scale-up mission-critical database, is under significant load. Now, because this workload is so important, I want to ensure this virtual machine is safely replicated off-site. Today, replication is complex to configure and often requires expensive proprietary hardware. With Windows Server 8, we want you to deliver an enhanced, reliable infrastructure with Hyper-V Replica. Hyper-V Replica is asynchronous, application-consistent virtual machine replication built into Windows Server 8. One of the things I wanted to point out is with Hyper-V Replica, all you need to replicate a virtual machine from one location to another is Hyper-V and a network connection. In fact, let's go ahead and replicate our mission-critical SQL virtual machine. I'm going to right-click and go to Enable Replication. First, I'm going to specify the target server and the authentication type. Basically, where do I want to replicate this virtual machine and how do I want to encrypt it? Next, I'm going to configure which virtual disks do I want to replicate. I'm going to replicate them all by default and just move right along. Now I can configure the recovery history. Basically, how many snapshots do I want to keep for this replicated virtual machine? I'm going to click on Next. Now I choose the initial replication mode. Basically, how do I want to perform that initial replication? Over the network immediately? Do I want to schedule it? Or do I want to do it offline via media? I'm going to start the initial replication immediately and click Next. And you can see, in just a few clicks, I've started replicating my mission-critical SQL database from my Microsoft private cloud to my off-site data center. In addition, Hyper-V Replica works with any server vendor, any storage vendor, any network vendor. With Windows Server 8, we're delivering massive, massive scale in the box. We're delivering mission-critical reliability infrastructure enhancements and unlimited replication in the box with Hyper-V Replica. But again, I haven't even scratched the surface. With literally hundreds of new features coming in the Microsoft Private Cloud, there's no better time to get started than today.
So let me just say that there's going to be a lot more announcement at this conference, Build 8, and I will be absolutely streaming this stuff down. I've already booked the day off. I can't go over to Anaheim, but this is going to be a key set of announcements and key bit of information. So mid-September here, a couple of weeks from now, I highly encourage you to come back and talk to us about some of the specific details. Just want to leave you with a few links at this slide presentation that you'll get. The Microsoft Virtual Academy, definitely worth checking out if you're already an ESX administrator person. Easy stuff to pick up. You'll be able to get running up on Hyper-V in literally a couple of half an hour. You give it a go, same concepts apply. Before I open up to question and answers, just going to talk to you about our evaluations, please fill them out. You can win yourself a touch mouse, and there's this tech quest stuff. So as this, I'll leave this on the screen, and happy to open up for questions and answers. No questions? Yeah, so the question about replication of virtual machines that need to quest the data, yeah, using VSS service, the VSS questing mechanisms within the guests. Right now, today, there's still some outstanding issues, I guess, from a pure Hyper-V perspective. That's being dramatically improved in some things going forward. The other thing as well is you have to call those providers, so the applications will call those providers. Yeah. So when you're looking at that VSS quiescing, definitely an area that you need to be delicate about. So if you're actually replicating at the storage level, before you start that replication, you should make sure that the quest VSS calls have been made. Yeah. No. That absolutely. So I think that, you know, fundamentally similar types of issues. Yep. Any support for KVM? The short answer is no. Right now, we've basically added support for what we see as the primary market space providers in there. KVM hasn't made the cut, at least right now. I look forward to hopefully us looking at that. But are you running KVM?
Yeah.
On what platform?
Red Hat.
Yeah. So I'd be interested in seeing how that works out in the next couple of iterations. Yeah, so Virtual Machine Manager offers so the question was, what's the conversion path? VMM offers an ability to migrate your VMDKs and convert them over to VHDs. Right now, that has to be done typically offline. So you can't have a live VMDK or virtual machine on an ESX host and then convert it to a VHD. What you can do if you want to do that in a live way is to actually spin up another copy of your application potentially and start to use VMM 2012 to do load balancing and then migrate your workload in that fashion. That's an example of one way you could do it online. The conversion process happens relatively straightforward. It's sort of a one-click thing. And then when you do the conversion, you know, go through and uninstall the VM tools. Yeah. All right. Well, if there's not any more questions, you can come down and continue asking me questions. Thank you very much for your time.